Early in my career, I heard one of the senior executives from my company say something that stuck with me ever since. He said, "Nothing can happen in business until somebody sells something." Hearing this, his audience in that moment, a group of hard-charging sales managers, went crazy. They took this to mean that they were the most important people in the company because they were the driving force behind everything good that was happening. Now, looking back, I'm not sure that this was the exact meaning the executive intended, but it served as a battle cry for the sales team and served to put a spring in their step for years to come. Revenue is the lifeblood of any business, and it's one of the factors that determines success or failure. So one could rationally argue that the revenue generators are the most important people in any for-profit business. But finding high-quality, committed sales professionals isn't easy. And keeping your top performers can be equally challenging. There's no worse day for a sales manager than when one of his or her top producers calls to say that she's leaving to pursue another opportunity. And if you've been there, you know how that feels. That's why I think my conversation with Dan Fantasia, founder of Treeline, one of the world's premier sales recruiting agencies, will be so important for you to hear. And even if you're not responsible for leading sales teams or recruiting salespeople, please continue to listen, because we're also going to talk about building teams that excel and have great cultures, topics that apply to every leader. So sit back and enjoy this episode of the Mission First People Always Podcast.
Welcome to the Mission First People Always Podcast, where we talk about better business results, stronger teams, more successful careers, and happier lives. Along the way, we hope to bust some biases, build some bridges, and have some fun. We're glad you're here. And now, our host, Dr. Mike Patterson.
Dan Fantasia has been in the field of sales recruiting since 1997 and founded Treeline in 2001. His extensive focus on helping companies build world-class elite sales teams has helped change the lives of over 3,300 sales professionals. Dan has built a deep knowledge of what it takes to build and grow a top-producing business. As a proven leader and innovator, Fantasia has created a positively charged culture that promotes the good in every person. And this has resulted in a team that has developed best practice methodologies and technology that continue to revolutionize the industry. Dan Fantasia, welcome to the Mission First People Always Podcast. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I appreciate the invite.
And you're in Boston. That's your home. That's where your company is. And I love Boston. I mentioned that to you as we were chatting before we hit record here. Boston is a city filled with great American history, great food. And I've heard you've got a couple of sports teams there. I've been misinformed, but sports is kind of a thing in Boston, I understand.
Yeah, it is. For a small town, we have a lot of fun up here, that's for sure.
Well, I've been looking forward to this conversation with you because I started my professional life post my time in the Army. I started my career in sales. I did pharmaceutical sales and then grew into sales management and spent a good chunk of my career trying to build great sales teams, find great salespeople, perform over and above expectations that were given to me. So I love the world of sales. I'm excited to talk to you about the world of sales now. And so let's jump in. I'll just jump in with a statement and then I'll let you respond to it. I think, and this is Mike's bias here, that sales is the lifeblood of any organization. Without sales, and by extension, salespeople, nothing else can really happen in the business, or at least nothing good can happen. Sales is what gives fuel to everything else the business does. So if finding good salespeople, and let's say great salespeople, should really be the top priority for any leadership team, any CEO, any executive team that wants to succeed. Is that always the case, though? In your experience, do leaders appropriately prioritize hiring and then building really strong sales teams?
Yeah, great statement. There's a lot there. So yes, I do believe that sales is the lifeblood of any organization. No matter how strong the product is, if you can't get it to market, no one will know about it and it just won't sell. It doesn't matter how much stronger or better a product is than another product. The team that has the best sales, marketing, and ability to drive a message to the marketplace is the one that succeeds. So for most companies, they do understand this and they tend to grow. For some founder-led companies or smaller organizations, if the CEO is a technologist, many times they focus on the technology and wonder why they struggle to bring it to market, because they believe their technology is so far, it's far superior than their competition. And so they struggle, not until there is maybe a private equity or VC or some kind of backing that comes in that helps influence that opinion, do those type of organizations start to really seriously consider sales. And once they do, once they find what a talented sales organization looks like, they see their business grow. You know, they'll 10x a company because they understand how to find top talent and really bring that great product to market.
Well, speaking of finding great talent, you know, many of us grew up with this old expression, it's hard to find good help these days. Does that apply to finding great salespeople? And I know this is your business. You founded Treeline, which has become one of the country's top sales recruiting firms. So just how hard is it to find a great salesperson? How does one hire a top producer?
Yeah, it is very difficult. And the reason why it's difficult is because the first step to finding top talent is understanding what a top salesperson looks like in your organization. And so that includes a whole bunch of things. That includes domain expertise, average sales size, sales cycle, you know, strategic sales as opposed to transactional sales. There's all these key characteristics that are important to your selling environment. And until you understand what those characteristics look like, it's nearly impossible to hunt down and find the right candidate for you or the right salesperson. So what we do many times, Mike, is we spend a lot of time with our companies consulting and understanding what their sales model is so that when we go to market, we can deliver individuals that meet the personality characteristics of their sales environment, that have the domain expertise, the average sales size, sales cycle, they're calling on the right audience. And once we understand all of those things, once again, we can deliver top talent that understands your sales model, that shares the same personality characteristics as your top producers. And ultimately, when we do that, you can start to build and scale a really talented A-player sales organization.
So do most of your clients come to you with answers to those questions, or does it require someone on your team or you yourself working them through finding those answers? Perhaps it's a bit of both, I would imagine.
Some companies know exactly what they want until we really start bringing them talented individuals. And then variables. There are variables that come with every search that companies aren't prepared for. And so as educated as they are on the requirement and what they're looking for, when we start introducing them to top talent, things start to change. They start to realize that the person they really want is outside of their budget. They can't afford them. So what's the strategy then? Do you increase comp or do we reduce requirements? In other words, do we reduce the amount of years of experience they have? And so as we're going to market, we're bringing a lot of data to our clients. And while, again, some of them think they know exactly what they're looking for, when we bring them data, they start to pivot and change. And once they start to change, they start to dial into the right skill set for the organization. And then we continue to find more individuals that meet that exact skill set and hire the best one.
Yeah, I can very much relate to what you're saying. I've been part of organizations, worked with clients, and they create these expectations of a new employee, a job description that's 17 pages long, and you'd have to be Superman or Superwoman to be able to do all those things. And they're excited to offer, you know, $23 an hour for all of this. Right. And they get hit right in the face with reality that says you're not paying for what you're asking for. And that's real world.
Yeah, it's true. And a lot of times you need to go through the exercise, right? Megan, to your point, you've experienced it before. You need to go through that exercise and start meeting talented candidates to figure out where you do play in the market and who you can bring on board.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2024, with all the cool things that are happening in the tech industry, AI and everything else, do truly great people still want to go into sales? Is sales still an attractive profession for young people, you know, right out of college, a few years out of college? Is it something that people are excited about, or is it and plan for and prepare for, or is it something they fall into? I've met both kinds of people, and maybe you have some data that suggests certain people do much better because that's their life's calling versus other people that kind of stumble into it because something else didn't work out.
So the perception of sales is still in many cases negative, but it's changing. You know, sales, the hard close, the silent close, you know,
the doorknob close.
Right. You know, that's changed. There's so much data and information. Now it's more about conversations and understanding the needs of the client and then offering them a solution. And so when you have one bad sales experience, and that could be in any industry, but if you have one bad experience, you start to get turned off and you think your perception of sales is forcing someone to buy something they don't want or need because you've had a bad experience. But in reality, that is not what sales is about. It's to understand and figure out and ask questions around the needs of your prospect or client and then offer them a solution that actually benefits them and helps them, you know, ultimately grow their business. So there is still a negative perception, but sales has changed. Secondly, universities now, Mike, you know, there's a handful of universities that have sales degrees or at least sales clubs. And what's nice about this is they're really bringing students or they're educating students on what sales is. They're making it not as scary as most people think, and they're introducing it to a whole new generation. I mean, I feel like for our business, we spend a lot of time introducing and bringing people into the sales career and then helping them find a really good company so they can sustain a career, stay within the sales community, and keep growing and advancing their career. Well, the colleges and universities are also getting the word out. And so they're bringing all these new students to, you know, they're introducing them to sales and giving them a positive light on exactly what the role is and what the career looks like.
So there's a difference. I sense what you're saying here is there's a difference between a salesperson and a true sales professional who spends the majority of their career in sales. They feel like they're part of this professional community. They're always upping their skills. They see themselves as someone who is truly helping clients solve important problems. Do you agree? Is there a difference between a sales professional and a salesperson?
I suppose so. I think, you know, everyone that's in sales, and if they believe it to be a career for them, they believe that they're meant for it at some level. And by the way, in sales, there's a lot of different roles, right? There is net new business. So there's outbound, there's prospecting for new business. There's account managers, there's channel, there's business development. There's so many different opportunities and directions a person can go in when they enter the career of sales. most people think it's all, you know, hunting and cold calling, but there's a variety of different career paths that anyone could take. So depending on the individual, they tend to find their own path based on, again, their personality characteristics.
Now, thinking as someone who is a business owner, an organizational executive who needs to build a top producing sales team, what are some of the good strategies you would advise, and maybe talk about the process that they should be anticipating? A moment ago, you talked about identifying the characteristics of the right candidate, a successful salesperson within that business. What are some other strategies that are necessary to consider as you build out a top producing sales team? Say I've got a great new product and I'm super excited about it and it's going to change the world, but I'm the innovator. I created the product and I recognize I got to take it to market. What are some of the thought processes that I would need to go through and do to make this happen?
Yeah, that's a great example, Mike. And the reason why it's a great example is because it's specific. Small, mid-sized, large companies, there's a different strategy for all of them. But in this instance, if you're the founder and the innovator and you are the salesperson, what tends to happen is the way you sell will not be the same as the way your first salesperson sells. And so as a result, as the founder or the innovator, many times you will go and say, I need to hire salespeople. I need help. And you go hire a salesperson. You think they're a great fit and they don't work out. And you hire another salesperson and they don't work out. And the reason why the people don't work out is because you haven't taken the time to stop for 1 second and figure out how the sales model works. Number one. Number two, you're the innovator. You will sell differently. Companies will come to you. Your network will come to you. You're the developer. You created this. So the way you sell will look totally different from how your first salesperson sells. And if you can't understand that, you will turn people over like crazy because they can't sell the way you do. They don't have the connections. They don't have the brand. They haven't done anything. Instead, they need to come in and figure out what the sales process looks like from womb to tomb, from first cold call to closing a deal. What does that look like? Because it's not going to be a referral from a VC partner or a board member or something of that nature. They're going to have to go out. The salesperson's going to have to go out and hunt for a new business. So we want to find someone that understands and knows how to build process around bringing a product to market. So we want to understand what the metrics look like to be successful. We want a person that can come in and say, all right, in the first 30 days, this is what I'm going to accomplish. I'm going to understand who our core customer is. I'm going to understand and get our positioning down. I'm going to look at our metrics and figure out how many calls need to happen on a daily basis, how many emails need to go out, how many social connects need to happen, what our marketing looks like. And they're building a process to understand what this looks like. There's going to be a lot of failure. There's going to be a lot of hard work and heavy lifting. But as the innovator, you want to motivate and you want to really help positively charge this person to go to market and test it to see what works and what doesn't work. In month two, they're gathering more data. In month three, they're seeing what's working and what's not working. And they're now starting to bring companies to close. When they understand that process, which might take 3, 6, 9 months to figure out, once they understand their process and they can tell you what it looks like from the beginning to the end, from cold call to close, then they can build metrics. They can hire the personality characteristics that can meet these metrics that are required. And then they can train and scale them to follow the playbook to be successful. Once the first person gets ramped up, then they can hire a second person. They follow the playbook. When they're successful, they can now scale and hire a second, a third, a fourth, a fifth. But until the innovator lets go and lets someone take over that process and really learn what sales looks like from a cold call to a close and have patience and support to learn this for their business, they ultimately, if they can't get that down, they ultimately hire and fire people because they just can't produce and they're not moving fast enough for the innovator.
I think that the word that jumped out at me as you were sharing that approach is patience. And it's hard for people, I would imagine it's hard for people who maybe have bootstrapped their business. They've brought a product finally after years of toil and trouble, blood, sweat, and tears. They've got this product that's going to change the world. And now you're telling them, well, we need to be patient and figure out, you know, how this is going to work and the playbook and 3, 6, 9 months. And they're saying, no, we desperately need, you know, sales right now. And the product is here. Let's go. Is giving feedback, coaching, hiring managers, founders, whoever that may be, to be patient, kind of part of your job?
Yeah, oh, it absolutely is. If we don't set accurate expectations at the very beginning of this process, it will fail. And for many companies, what happens is they'll come in and they'll say, I've hired 3 people and they didn't work out. And I think you had mentioned patience, you know, 3 to 6 months. Yes, you do have a new product. You want to get it to market as soon as possible. But if you hire and fire, you know, 3 people in 6 months, you've accomplished almost nothing.
Yeah.
And so you do need to find the right person and you have to have the patience to build a systematic approach to your sales environment or your sales model, or you'll end up, you struggle to find success and you'll also be frustrated with every salesperson you hire because no matter how good they are, they will likely fail.
Yeah. And they're not you.
They're not you. Yeah. Yeah. Good point. They are not you.
So how do you, let's assume you've gathered some good people. The playbook is coming together. You're starting to see results. In fact, maybe you're starting to see great results. How do you retain your best people? Because aren't there people like you out there in the world who are trying to recruit these people away and direct them somewhere else so they can make more money, maybe have a different sort of experience? How do you hold on to your best salespeople?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, what we recommend is you've got to be talking to your sales team all the time. You know, what makes them happy? What motivates them? Not what motivates you, not what you think is important to the sales team. Not, you know, not creating spiffs that you think are cool, but no one else does. You know, giveaways, you might be giving things away, but in actuality, what your team needs is a break because they're working so hard and they get a little bit burnt out. Instead of giving them something, you give them time. I guess the point is, it's talking to your sales team and understanding what they want, what they need to be successful, but also what they need to stay positive, to be happy and content in their role. There's something we do, it's called the Stop, Stop, Keeps on a quarterly basis. The team sends anonymous data around that they think we should start doing, what we should stop doing, what we should keep doing. And on a quarterly basis at our quarter end meeting, we go through all of those and we adjust the company and pivot and change based on the things that are realistic that we can do and accomplish. And for those that aren't, the ideas that aren't, we have an honest dialogue and explain why we can't do it. But at least everyone is part of the organization. They have input, they have influence, and they feel that. And that is pretty much, that's critical to, I think, the success of any organization. It's understanding what is important to the sales team and not necessarily what's important to you.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. One size never fits all. And some people on the team might love to win that trip to Hawaii, and that would be a dream come true for them. But maybe someone else with small children at home, family situation that makes it really hard to go off to Hawaii for a week, that great incentive isn't so great for them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think for many companies, I think maybe some companies are afraid to ask, you know, and sometimes it's hard to hear the feedback, by the way, Mike, you know, and someone, you get a lot of feedback. Sometimes, you know, you can't take it personally. You got to realize, okay, I understand. You can't be frustrated by the feedback. You've got to work on creating the environment that works best for everyone.
Yeah. I've been waiting to ask this question, and I'll put it out there now. How important is money, compensation, as a factor for a top performing salesperson? And what's the right mix between, I'm anticipating your answer is going to be something along the lines of it depends, but what are your thoughts on the mix between the ideal mix between fixed and variable comp, commission bonus versus base? I mean, that this has been a career long conversation in organizations I've been part of. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, there's so when it comes to compensation does matter. At least it raises eyebrows and gets people interested. And it is unusual for a person to take less compensation. So think of it that way. But that's not what ultimately is going to drive them to take an opportunity. It all depends on, you know, what's happening in their life, what their selfish needs are. Something may have changed. Maybe they're traveling too much. Maybe they're going to the office every day and it just doesn't work for them anymore. They need to be in a hybrid. But there's all kinds of variables that are causing them to look for new opportunities. Or when we call them about an opportunity, something's recently happened that's made them to, you know, stop for a second and think about considering options. So we first need to understand what's happening in their lives, what do they need, and what are we searching for to help them with their career. So money is helpful, but it's not everything. And then when it comes to how the comp structure breaks out, we see for a hunter outbound kind of net new sales opportunity, it's usually a 50-50 type of comp structure. So if it's a $100,000 base, it's a $200,000 at plan number. But for account management or channel or, you know, customer success, many times the base salary is higher and the variable compensation is lower, right? So it all depends on the role, the position, but for most net new, it's 50-50.
Yeah, that's helpful. In sales, you have really high highs, and sometimes you have really low lows. You're in a slump. You can't close anything. You can't find a deal no matter how hard you work. How do you keep a sales team engaged and fired up during one of those slumps? Maybe it's a economic downturn. Maybe it's a particular marketplace issue. Whatever caused the slump, it's a slump. How do you keep people in the game?
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, you've managed many sales teams, Mike. You ever set a goal and something changes in the economy or the market, and now all of a sudden the goal is no longer realistic?
Yep.
And so you're always behind it and you're always chasing it. That is a surefire way to drive negativity into your sales organization. I mean, I hate to say it. So we usually don't like to move our numbers, but occasionally we will. And the reason why we do it is because we recognize that we need to reassess and reset our goals. Now, we don't do it every month, but we might look at it on a quarterly basis or at the half of the year. And we want to reset expectations, which means that it's having an honest conversation with the team. The market's challenging. We know you're struggling. We are going to reduce our goals. We're going to reduce, you know, the activity because we know it's a challenging market. Now, some people would disagree with that and give up on it and say that we're giving up. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to keep everyone sane, and we're not trying to pretend. We're trying to be honest with ourselves. And when we're honest with ourselves, that means we can set accurate expectations around numbers, the achievable goals and quotas, but also it helps to reassess and help people understand compensation will change because those numbers change.
Yeah.
And that's not something you should be fearful of. It's something you should be honest with your team about, because they know it, whether you talk about it or not, they know it. And if they're all sitting around saying there's no way we're going to hit our numbers this year, this is unrealistic, and they're feeling all kinds of pressure from management and themselves, they know they're going to make less money. They know the number's not realistic. And so they start talking, it becomes cancerous, and they start leaving. But if you have an honest dialogue and you tweak and you pivot and you change a little bit to, you know, adjust to the market, well, now they're at least hitting the new goals. They're on pace. They're feeling more positive. They feel like you're working with them on it. And it takes, you know, it takes the edge off a little bit because they're getting so beat up in the market as it is. And so it's just it's a company helping and understanding, you know, the needs. Now, for many public companies, that might not be an option. But for privately held companies or smaller companies, that is a great way to, you know, keep your team engaged and they understand the methodology, you know, behind tweaking the numbers.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think it really comes down to sales. A good salesperson wants to win and they look at the scoreboard often. And if they feel like they're in a game where it's impossible to win, the game is rigged or the rules are such that it's just impossible for me to come out on top here, they're going to check out and find a different game to play. And so why not set them up to win in the environment they're in? That's my opinion. Now, got just a couple more questions. Maybe we'll call this the penultimate question in our conversation, Dan. And that's this: how I built this really strong team. How do I keep developing my team members so they keep growing? Everything I read in the literature about retention includes, especially for some of the more recent generational cohorts, is I want to feel like I'm growing and developing and becoming more. Even if I'm not making more, I want to become more as a person. How do we help sales team leaders know what's right for their team?
Yeah, repetition is important. But I think there's a lot here. So one thing we do is we believe in talent assessments and we do it on a quarterly basis. And when we talk about helping a person grow, the best way to help them grow professionally is to also help them grow personally. And so it's kind of intertwined. So it's not just about constant sales training. It's when you help a person grow, you see it in their personal life and their professional life. And so when we do our talent assessments, we talk about our core values and are they living the core values on a daily basis and productivity. It's a combination of both. And so if we see that someone has, you know, high productivity, but they have low core values, or they're not living the core values on a daily basis, we're coaching them on those core values. Because when they joined the company, we interviewed them around their core values. They believed in the core values. And so if they're off track, we want to encourage them. So for example, one of our core values is empowerment. We want to see people that are, you know, thinking on their own, thinking independently, empowering themselves to be better at the job, to make the company better. And if we see that a person is high productivity, but they're not empowering themselves, we want to work on helping them empower themselves. By helping them empower themselves in their life and in their work, they will become stronger sales professionals. And so we're constantly training on, yes, we're training on sales techniques, we're training on individual goals, and we're training on, you know, core values so that we're building better, stronger individuals. And when you do that, they become better, stronger sales professionals.
No, I think thinking in that approach is one of the reasons, Dan, that you've built Treeline into one of the top sales recruiting firms in the country. You've been there since 2001. You've lived through the aftermath of 9/11, the Great Recession, the COVID pandemic, and you're still going strong. And one of the things I wanted to mention to the audience is the availability and your offer for folks to come check out your website and access the really great free resource page you have there. You've got interview guides and resources. You've got information about compensation, all sorts of good tools for people who are thinking about making a change within their sales profession, getting into a sales profession. I think free resources are always wonderful for people to engage with. And after the type of good information you've shared with us during this conversation, those resources must be really strong. So I encourage people to go check those out. Got one more question for you. Everybody knows what it is if you've listened to the show before, and it's this. Dan, what's one piece of really practical advice that you can offer my listeners today that they can take away and begin applying right away to be a better leader, better team member, be a better sales professional in your world? What would that advice be?
Yeah, what comes to mind, and I don't know if you know your audience will like this or not. It's pretty basic, but start your day every day saying to yourself, "Today's going to be the best day of my life," and it really sets the stage to tackle anything that day. And say it over and over again: "Today is going to be the best day of my life." I've got a sign in front of the door, and I always encourage my kids to say that. They all think I'm crazy, of course, but it's a great way to start every day with a positive attitude, to face every challenge for every day with a positive outlook so that you can live your life happy and with a smile on your face.
Yeah, what great advice. Dan, thanks for being a great guest on the Mission First People Always podcast. To my audience, you can reach Dan. All of Dan's contact information is in the show notes. He's the founder and CEO of Treeline, a top recruiting firm helping people find employment and helping organizations find great salespeople. To my audience, thanks for listening. I hope this conversation was added value in some way to your day. And I would encourage you to write a review if you thought it was valuable. Tell a friend, subscribe, follow, whatever that is. We talk about good, positive ideas that make you better people, better business people, better leaders, better team members, and who doesn't want to get better? So I'm very grateful you've allowed me to be part of your leadership journey. Until next time, be a great human being.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please subscribe and tell a friend. Dr. Mike Patterson is an active consultant, speaker, and master facilitator who works with leaders and teams around the world. If you want to create a stronger, more people-centric, and empowered culture for your organization, visit drmikepatterson.com or follow the link in the show notes to connect with us. You can find the link to grab your copy of Dr. Mike's latest book, Mission First, People Always, the definitive guide to balancing people and performance. Also, don't miss out on the e-learning experience that brings the book to life with videos and engaging activities.